You are listening to the Bryson Book Club on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, a monthly show dedicated to all things books and writing in Brighton and beyond. This is our year anniversary episode. Thank you to everyone who's tuned in over the last 12 months, who subscribed to the podcast and contacted us on social media. This month we have a book to screen special. Even though adaptations have always happened, they seem increasingly common these days, and it's rare to watch something that wasn't previously a book. In an article published last year on Medium.com, film adaptations from books are more successful than original screenplays, and they generate 53% more revenue than original screenplays worldwide. 70% of the world's top 20 grossing films are based on books. On today's show, I'll be speaking to book and film fanatics Emily Benita and Laura Lockington, to best-selling writer Irvin Welsh about adapting Trainspotting, and discussing this month's book club book, Supper Club, by Lara A. Williams, with local theatre maker and poet Laura Mugridge. You can stay in touch with us by email at btnbookclub@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Anna M. Burt, B-U-R-T-T, and on Instagram at btnbookclub. Show is also a podcast and you can download it from all good platforms. I asked you guys about your favourite and least favourite book to screen adaptations this month. I heard everything from hating Little Fires Everywhere to loving it, from loving Normal People, from not loving The Time Traveller's Wife, but loving the book, loving both Emmas, and finding I Capture the Castle film moist. People loved the Northern Lights books, they hated the film, but they loved the TV adaptation. The list goes on. I'm really looking forward to today's show, which was all recorded safely and remotely. Do let us know what you think. Here it is.
Laura Lockington, you are one of the most voracious consumers of film and TV I've ever met.
Yeah, I do like my movies. And I do love a boxed set, and I do love my books. So, yeah, that I am pretty voracious in my appetites, yeah.
So I'm going to jump straight in there and ask you what your favourite book-to-screen adaptation is.
Weirdly, you know, it's books that I don't like reading. So, for instance, I would say Dickens. I loathe Dickens. In book form, but I kind of love the films. And recently I saw a new David Copperfield, which is absolutely brilliant. And Tilda Swinton is in it, and she is amazing. And the film was brilliant. So it's that kind of thing. If you hate the book, you might love the film, you know, and conversely the other way around. So, for instance, one of my favourite books is The Goldfinch, Donna Tartt, and the film was a huge disappointment. So it kind of works both ways, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So if you could adapt your wonderful book, your kind of food memoir, Cupboard Love for Screen.
Cupboard Love, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Who would play who?
Oh my goodness me, what a question. I honestly don't know. I'm trying to think. I mean, I hate a don't know as an answer, but I can't think who would be. Ooh, I tell you who I really like is Alex Kingston. Uh-huh. I'd love her to play me in the book. That would be fabulous. Absolutely fabulous. But then you'd want someone like, I want someone like the late, great Katharine Hepburn to play my mum.
Oh, that would be amazing.
That would be cool, wouldn't it? Yeah.
Absolutely. So you have actually recently written a screenplay, haven't you? You've turned your hand.
Yes, I did. I've turned, yes. Yes, gamekeeper turned poacher. writing a screenplay, I mean, I have to say, it wasn't a full-length screenplay. It's a short film. It's going in all the European short film festivals next year. It's called A Little Less Conversation, and it was a real laugh to write. I absolutely adored it and galloped through it, and then was on set and was lucky enough to see it all come to life in front of my eyes. So yeah, it was great actually, and so much easier than writing a novel or a short story, because it's all dialogue, it's all in the dialogue, you know. So lucky enough to have some really great actors working on it, and it is a light, funny film. It's not a heavy, you know, Scandinavian murder noir mystery or anything. It's a bit of a laugh, so that made it easy as well. But it was a joy, absolute joy. Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to see it. It's just, I know it's going to be absolutely amazing.
Oh, I hope so. Yeah.
Oh, fingers crossed for everything opening
yeah.
up. So Laura, I found a list courtesy of BookBub of the most popular books to movie adaptations. So I'm going to read them out in a list. And can you just answer, i.e. loved book, hated film, or
read, gotcha.
Haven't seen read, etc. Okay.
Gotcha. Okay.
And maybe a little bit of why, because I always like
Sure.
Why.
Okay. Yeah.
Right. To Kill a Mockingbird.
Have read it, have seen it, pretty neutral on it, to be honest.
Okay. Sense and Sensibility.
Oh, didn't like the book, loved the film. Mm-hmm. And also, I think Jane Austen, a bit like Dickens, works really well in film.
Yes, I agree, actually, because I'm not a massive Austen in book. No. Fan, but I love a period drama.
Me too, yeah.
And actually, one thing we have in common is that we don't love sci-fi books, but we both love sci-fi films.
Absolutely. And, you know, I tried to read a sci-fi book the other day, and if it hadn't been on my Kindle, if it had been in paperback, I would have thrown it across the room.
Okay. The Godfather.
Oh, great book. Better movie. Absolutely bloody love it. It's fantastic. Godfather 1, Godfather 2. Just as good. And at a pinch, on a rainy Sunday afternoon, if I make some pasta, I will watch Godfather 3. Yeah.
Okay, Forrest Gump.
Oh, dear God, no. Oh, God, no. No, 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 no. I haven't read the book. I have watched the film. I just thought it was silly.
I hate Forrest Gump.
Me too. Loathe it. Absolutely loathed it. Yeah.
Little Women.
Oh, well... Yeah, I had a copy of Little Women when I was a child, and there was a misprint in it. And instead of saying Beth goes into the corner and had a rapture, it said Beth went into the corner and had a rupture. So it always really made me giggle. And I think the book is actually better than all the films. There's been so many remakes of the film. The book isn't as sentimental as the films are, I feel. But yeah, I'd much prefer the book to the film. Yeah.
Did you see the new film, the Greta Gerwig one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not impressed. No, not really. I mean, it's all right. Again, rainy Sunday afternoon, you know?
Yeah.
Nothing fantastic, I thought.
How about Dr. Zhivago?
Oh, never read it. Loved the film. But I think, to be honest with you, I saw it a long time ago. I haven't rewatched it. I don't know that it would stand the test of time.
Yeah, I think I'm similar with Gone with the Wind.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Although fantastic music, isn't it, in Dr. Zhivago? I mean, we all hum and sing along with that. We know it. And of course, the snowy scenes are so spectacular. But I'm not sure about the... I just think it's probably a bit dated now, actually.
How about The Colour Purple?
Oh, dear God, no. No, no, no. Can't be doing with it. No. It tugs the heartstrings too much for me. I don't like anything quite so emotional. I think it's too much in your face.
Okay. Now, this is one that I'm not sure, because I know that you're not particularly a graphic novel reader, are you?
Okay, no.
But Persepolis.
Haven't read it, don't know it.
Okay.
Can't comment, no.
No comment. How about The Wizard of Oz?
Yeah, that's a tough one, actually. I mean, everyone says, you know, it's a classic movie. It's always in the lists of films. I'm a little bit indifferent to it. I think having seen it once, it's not something I would rewatch, and I've certainly never read it. I think I just get obsessed with Judy Garland, really. And I look at her and think, oh my God, the studio's put her on diet pills. They've bound her boobs up. She's on speed. And all the munchkins got drunk in a marquee and had terrible, terrible hangovers for the duration of the film. So that kind of takes over for me when I watch that, because that's all I'm thinking about, you know?
Wouldn't it be fun to make a like behind the scenes of the film Wizard of Oz film?
Well, I think in was it Hollywood, that sort of amazing TV series? Oh, yeah. I think they sort of touched on that actually. And yeah, it's like Babylon Hollywood and all of that stuff. So the stuff that went on, you know, behind the scenes, the making of Wizard of Oz, is a bit more interesting than the actual film to me. Yeah.
That's a very good answer. Okay, how about The Princess Bride?
Well, never read it. Mm-hmm. I have seen it. Yeah, it's okay. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I can't rave about it. It's, again, rainy Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, there is a theme here.
yeah, there is, isn't there? Yeah.
How about Remains of the Day?
Oh, gosh. That was so lovely. Absolutely beautiful film, I thought. Slow and measured and understated. Absolutely beautiful. And the book, well, the sort of very novella, I would say, really, isn't it? Again, understated and beautiful. And it always occurs to me sometimes when you read these slight stories, how clever filmmakers are to make a full feature-length film of something so slender, you know?
Yeah, really. I don't even know where to start with.
No, I think very insightful bit of filmmaking there. Yeah,
absolutely. Okay, finally, Schindler's List.
Do you know? Never read it. Never seen it.
Me neither.
Really? Oh yeah. My God! No, I mean it just doesn't appeal, does it?
Well, it sounds completely horrible.
I know. I mean,
I can't bring myself.
Exactly. I mean, we sort of know the story, so why am I going to put myself through it? You know, it's like, I mean, this, well, I mean, obviously it's not a funny subject, but it's a funny pairing, is that you know, on Amazon you get the people who bought this book also bought this book.
Yeah.
And people who buy have bought my book, Cupboard Love, apparently always buy The Boy in the Striped Pyjamas, which is which is a terrible book about Auschwitz. I have no idea. So, no, that doesn't appeal at all. No, it's so funny you haven't seen it either.
No. Do you like war films and books in general?
No, not really. Do you?
No, not particularly, actually. And coming from a family who kind of escaped the Second World War, it was very much kind of, I would never be shown or allowed to watch as a kid one of those kind of Second World War films. It was very much too soon and not spoken about. Yeah. So it just wasn't part of my education.
No, I can understand that. I mean, it's really difficult, isn't it? Because obviously we've all got to know about it. And, you know, of course it should be taught in schools. But I do remember seeing in primary school, we were shown a film of the, you know, the liberation of one of the camps. And I frankly feel that I never want to see anything like that ever again, even in fictionalized war films. You know, it was too traumatic. But again, it's something we've all got to know. We've got to know about it, but I don't really want to see it. And I certainly don't really want to read about it, particularly, you know? Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Moving on. I love this question, if I say so much.
Okay, cool.
If you could adapt a much loved book to film, what would it be?
Well, I think it would probably be one of Molly Keane's books. I think, gosh, there's so many of them. Although there was a TV series, Good Behavior, that had Hannah Gordon as the mother. But I think a full-length feature film of that would be fantastic. And the other one, I suppose, is again, they do these TV adaptations of them, but I'd like to see a really sumptuous full-length feature film of a Nancy Mitford book. Love in a Cold Climate would be amazing.
Yes, they haven't done that, have they?
No, they haven't. It's like Cold Comfort Farm. They tend to serialize it. Whereas I think if you put the weight of a full production behind it, I think it would be amazing. You know?
So, Laura, what have you read and watched recently that you would recommend to anyone listening?
Okay, well, I tell you what, I watched rewatched recently because the screenplay is by David Nichols. So he adapted the Patrick Melrose series for TV, which I was astounded that TV would take this on. I mean, it's a black, grim, bitterly, wildly funny, terrible series of books. You name it, it's got it in it. Addiction, sexual abuse, child sexual abuse. I mean, it's dreadful. But it also is terribly funny. And I thought, I wonder if David Nichols is the right guy to do this. So, having said that, I have to say I do know David, and he's an utterly charming and charismatic man. But he did it brilliantly, and it is fantastic. And it reminded me that last night on, I think, BBC, started his new, the adaptation of one of his books, which is Us. And I haven't watched it yet. So that's a treat I've got later on this evening. So I'm really anxious to see that because he has a really light touch with things. And I think it proved his worth. With the Patrick Melrose series, because I truly didn't think that anyone was capable of doing a screenplay of those books, and he completely proved me wrong. It is utterly brilliant. So I hope Us is as well. I've got high hopes for
Yes,
Us.
because I read One Day, when it first came out years ago, and loved it at the time, and watched the Anne Hathaway film, and genuinely almost cried with pain. I hated it so much.
Yeah, I know. It's a real shame. When you have a favorite book or even a book you've really enjoyed, you're kind of dreading the film, aren't you? You know, you're like, oh, please don't disappoint me, you know. Yeah, so I understand that. That's exactly how I felt with Goldfinch.
Oh, yeah. I still feel sad about that sometimes when I think of
I know, me
it.
too.
I wonder if they'll ever adapt The Secret History by Donna Tartt. What do you think?
Well, apparently it has been optioned so many times. And as we know, I've got in the biz. optioning a film doesn't mean you're going to make it. Optioning a film really means you're stopping someone else making it. So they option it for a year and they can either renew it or let it go. And I think it's changed studios quite a few times. I would love to see it on the big screen, and I don't know who would do it justice. You know,
No.
I don't know how the casting occasionally crosses my mind, or the director crosses my mind. But just because it's optioned doesn't mean it's going to be made, unfortunately. You know?
Very true. Right, Laura, thank you so much for your time today. Before we
Oh, my
go,
pleasure. Yeah.
can you tell us about your podcast, please?
Oh, certainly, yeah, the Yank and the Limey. I'm the Limey, obviously. My friend Christy Brooks is the Yank, and every week we recommend a book, and Christy, who's the wine goddess, recommends a Majorcan wine, and we also have a bitch generally about politics, worldviews, cooking, difference of between Americans and English, and life here in Majorca. So have a listen.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Emily Benita, welcome to the Brighton Book Club.
Hello, Annabeth. Thank you so much. I feel so welcome.
Can you introduce yourself to our lovely listeners?
Hello, lovely listeners. My name is Emily Benita. I am a comedian and general creative upstart based in Glasgow.
You love films, don't you?
I do, you know. I do love films.
And you love books, don't you?
I do. I am also very partial to books.
What's your favourite book?
I think it's probably going to update given the stuff that I've been reading recently, mainly on your suggestion of Boy Parts by Eliza Clark is really shooting up there, I'll be honest. But a book that's always really stayed with me, I think because it is just maybe a little pretentious, but I think it manages to cut through all of that because it's such an incredible piece of work, is House of Leaves by Mark Zedmuleski. It manages to be a mix of kind of, it's like a Chinese box story where you kind of go in level by level. There's a ghost story. There's stuff about the Minotaur. There's a love story. It kind of makes no sense. And yet it's just a deep dive. And it feels more like a game in a book than a book. So that a book disguise. So yeah, that stayed with me since I read it when I was, I think I first read it when I was about 21.
And you reread.
Oh yeah. I think because it feels less like rereading it and more, there are so many different ways that you can approach it, because you can read it from cover to cover, but then there's also footnotes, and yeah, so I love that it's just so ambitious in its approach, and I think it pretty much meets that ambition, so you know.
Fabulous. Well, that's a great pitch if I've ever heard one. What is your favourite book to film?
You know what? I think it's probably, and it comes from a really nostalgic place, because I was one of the last children to be born and have some sense of childhood without the internet. So to have books and like, it was just books and films really. And I think the two that are kind of tied in my head are the adaptations of The Secret Garden and A Little Princess.
Oh yes, both so lovely.
Aren't they? Because I think managing to get across, they're both so sumptuous, right? Like, and I think something about A Little Princess in both the book, but then the film as well, being able to show you the power of imagination, I think has just always stuck with me. And then The Secret Garden is actually for a children's film and an adaptation of a children's book. But then it's at that time where, you know, children are sort of little adults, and there's so much more transparency, I think, about things like grief and loss and strangeness, because The Secret Garden isn't afraid to have that really stark contrast between the sort of asceticism of the house. And like, I remember that really sort of like gruelly porridge she's made to eat, and how empty and drab that house is compared to the vibrancy of the garden, rendered perfectly. And I think that's testament to A Little Princess in particular, because when you're making something that's about imagination, and again, there's always been this sort of rivalry going on between books and films, and the idea that books somehow stimulate your imagination more than films, and I'm not sure I'm totally on board with that view, particularly because I think A Little Princess is so vivid in making her imagination tangible and visible to an audience.
Right, Emily, what is the worst adaptation? So when you've loved the book and hated the film, or vice versa?
Oh, okay, right. We need to talk about Kevin. I think I remember really loving the book at the time. And I love Lynn Ramsey's work. Like, Morven Callar, I think, actually, funnily enough, is also one of my favourite adaptations of book to film. I think it's stunning. And I can understand why Lynn Ramsey was then chosen. We need to talk about Kevin. Because Morven Callar, I think there's something about that character and Samantha Morton and the way that she shows Scotland and the escape and the fantasy. And that it's also kind of about being an author as well, in terms of how Morven kind of takes her boyfriend's last wish for the book to be hers, quite literally. You know, fair play to her. But there's something about when you talk about Kevin that I just found really, I don't know whether it's because it's something to do with the film having this kind of overtly American, it felt more like a gotcha moment when we come to the reveal in the film that I felt was actually kind of quite harrowing in the book. I felt like it was really miscast.
Like Tilda didn't do it for you.
She didn't, and she normally does. There's something about the ways that that the film didn't quite manage to capture, I think, in terms of her internal monologue, because I found the passages where she talks about sort of her pregnancies and how different they are, which some people might say a little bit on the nose, even in the book, Lionel Shriver, but there's that lacking that didn't quite come across in the film, which is odd because Lynn Ramsey is typically so great at being able to render a character's internal world and being able to read it on their faces. And I just found it quite a weird, bleak exercise. And I think it's because they don't feel connected. So even though the film itself has its merits, look, I don't feel that connection between them. And that's why I think it's one of the worst adaptations, because I can't really feel the threads between them.
So if you could write the screenplay for any book and star in it, what would it be?
Oh, if I could star in it. I don't think I'm quite the casting call for it, because it's I think I don't have quite the Scandi look as much as I wish that I did. But it's a book called Willful Disregard, subtitle A Novel About Love by Lena Anderson. And it's quite a slim book, starring, featuring Esther Nilsson, a poet and a sensible person in a sensible relationship. Who's that? Meets renowned artist Hugo Rask, and her rational world begins to unravel. And I think it's one of the best kind of small stories that speak very loudly that I've ever read, because it is just about this woman and her relationship and her internal machinations of kind of trying to rationalize the irrational to herself. And I think it's very darkly funny. Willful Disregard would be, if anyone wants to hire me, I don't have an agent. You can just come directly to me.
You can keep that 20%. if someone was going to play you in a film about your life, who would you want it to be?
Oh, that's such a good question. If Billy Lord were up for going on a Bridget Jones, Renee Zellweger-esque body transformation. I think she's hilarious. And I sometimes like to think to myself that in good lights, I look like Carrie Fisher. But I think she has the elements of myself that I would want to try and commit to screen forever and say, yeah, that's me. That's totally me. Because she's so dry in her delivery, but I think has such a vulnerability as well. And that's me, basically sarcastic and overly emotional.
Carrie Fisher has written some of my favourite books too. She is just amazing.
Actually, Postcards from the Edge is such an amazing adaptation, come to think of it. Loved the book. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, that's the thing. If you give people like Carrie Fisher book deals and then the option to write their own write their own adaptation, turns out really well.
Yeah, especially Meryl. Meryl was in it, wasn't she?
Meryl's so good. And I think it must be quite amazing to watch like Meryl Streep play yourself and to see someone else play your mother as well, because it's Shirley MacLaine doing a really stunning job, I think, as a Debbie Reynolds-ish character. I might have to watch that again, you know.
Yeah, I love both, actually. Right, tell me, please, about the podcast that you do that talks about films.
So me and my pal Ed Davis, we have a podcast about film and telly called Shot Reverse Shot, and we discuss a different theme week to week. We cover all sorts of topics in terms of thematic, we talk about genre, we talk about directors, but for the most part recently we have been talking more about the business, because huge shifts in the film industry even before the pandemic hit and in terms of their response to production and distribution and release and all that kind of thing, it's always in a bit of turmoil, but it's amazing how much that it just gets stuck to the trades. And I think this is actually the first time where so much more about the film industry itself, discussion around that, has come to the surface just out of necessity. But yeah, that's us, short reverse shot.
Fabulous. And how can we find and follow you and watch your online Edinburgh show?
Well, you can find me and follow me on variations of my name, Emily Benita, on Twitter. I am at Benita Emily. On Instagram, I am Emily _Benita. And that's Benita like Ben and then ITA. And my online Edinburgh show is called Poser. And I created it in response to realizing, oh yeah, the Edinburgh Fringe has been cancelled, but I still have lots of thoughts and feelings that I need to do something arty with. And it's a 25-minute, I call it a comedy essay, because I love a portmanteau and a bit. And it's got quite a long, unwieldy subtitle, a comedy essay about the past few years of my life, creatively and professionally. It's on a little dot card, the double R, dot co. It's Poser by Emily Benita, .card.co.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Em.
Thanks so much, Anna. This is lovely.
I'm delighted to be joined in the virtual Brighton Book Club studio by Irvin Welsh, the legend behind Trainspotting, amongst many other great projects. Irvin, please can you introduce yourself?
Hi, yeah, Irvin Welsh, writer. Yeah, that's about it, really. I kind of write novels and I write for film and TV and occasionally stage plays. And that's basically what I do.
So Trainspotting was published in 1993 and it was made into a play and then a film. Did you have the option to adapt it yourself?
Yeah, I mean... I could have signed up to people who wanted me to do it, but I liked the film Shallow Grave that Danny Boyle, John Hodge and Andrew McDonald did. I very much liked what they'd done, and I liked the idea that they would just take it and make it into something cinematic without me having any kind of real hands-on input. I was just fascinated to see what they would do with the material. I felt that... I couldn't really add anything to it, you know. I thought that they would sort of, and I thought the energy between them was important to maintain as a team, you know. So I was happy to kind of to stand aside, basically.
At what point did you watch Trainspotting when it was a film?
I resisted watching everything. I always do with films. I don't like looking at rushes or rough cuts and all that. I just want to. If you're one of the executive producers on the movie as well as a writer, it's different. You have to kind of be more hands-on. But my preference is not to really, it's just to go and see the finished version. I mean, I resisted all screenings until I saw the original, until I saw the version they wanted to show, basically. So it wasn't that, you know, it was kind of before it went to Cannes. I brought a few people down. I brought like kind of Primal Scream and Jeff Barrett and Pablo Hewitt and people like that, who were kind of like London sort of rock and roll kind of cognoscenti kind of friends, and because I knew they would be quite a hard audience for it, and I wanted it to have quite a hard audience. So I was pleased. You know, they were kind of blown away, so I knew that it was going to at least find some level of audience.
It has been named the best Scottish film of all time. How does that make you feel?
These things are kind of, you'll get all sorts of stuff, you know, the coolest British film, the best Scottish film, the kind of, the Britpop film and all that. And these are just labels that people apply, really. They don't really mean anything. But, you know, it's just, it's nice that people are positive about it, but there's nothing really qualitative or measured about something like that, you know. It's so subjective anyway that you can't really get, you can't really kind of take much kind of credence in it. But it's just nice to have positive rather than negative messages.
Absolutely. So T2 was quite a brave sequel to Trainspotting to make. Can you talk a bit about the process behind that and how you kind of eventually decided to do it?
Well, we've been talking about it for years and years, and for all sorts of reasons, we didn't. And I'm kind of glad we didn't, you know, because if we'd done it as porno, it was kind of, it really was porno, basically, with the sort of, instead of making a pornographic film, they built a brothel instead, like, so they were still involved in that kind of, the adult entertainment project going. But I think if we'd done it as porno, they still would have been quite young, you know, and it would have been the kind of further wacky adventures of these guys. And I don't think it would have added much to them, but to see them older, to see them reflective and looking back, and to see them in the same place as the audience who got into them originally, I think was very interesting. I think it was very emotional to a lot of people who went to see the movie. So I think it had much more of an emotional punch than it would have. I think it's a very interesting film. It's never going to have the verve and the shock factor of the original, but I think it's a really interesting complement to the original, because it's a clever film. You know, it's like it's very thoughtful, and it makes us look back and think about what we've all been doing basically these years. But you know, we found it very difficult. We were kind of a bit gun shy, really. We didn't really know what to do. You know, how to find a way into it. And when we did get ready to bite the bullet, there was always some contractual thing between, somebody couldn't do this, these dates and all that. So we kind of thought it would never happen. And then the window just opened up and we kind of collectively decided to dive through it after getting together for a weekend in Edinburgh, which was fun. You know, we enjoyed being together and working together and talking about it. And we just went for it after that, you know. So it happened quite quickly once we decided we were going to do it.
Amazing. So what is your favourite book to screen adaptation and why?
You know, I love Trainspotting, both Trainspottings, you know, Ecstasy didn't really kind of do well box office, but I do like the adaptation of it. And I love The Acid House, but my kind of favourite's Filth, because I think it's got one of the most amazing acting performances I've ever seen from James McAvoy. It's a real kind of tour de force for him to play that kind of role. And it's not a James McAvoy role. It's, it's incredibly dark. And but he just acts the hell out of this one. He really does. He just, there's one scene where he's making an abusive phone call to his neighbor's partner. And, you know, it's like, and he's sort of on the couch, kind of masturbating to a pornographic film, and he's looking at a video of his wife and his kids. So you've got all these mixed emotions, all this kind of stuff that's sort of happening to him at the same time. And he's navigating, as an actor, he's navigating these transitions, almost effortlessly, and seamlessly. It's a brilliant acting performance. And I think that I could keep watching that movie for McAvoy's acting performance alone.
Amazing. So, Irvin, if you could adapt a film, any film to screen, regardless of rights, what would it be? Anyone else's?
Anybody else's book to screen?
Mm-hmm.
It would be Alan Warner's The Man Who Walks, and I actually have tried to adapt that. Mark Cousins and I have tried to go at trying to adapt it. We've done a screenplay, and we almost got to the point where we could raise finance on it, but we couldn't quite make it. But it's just a book that's meant to be a movie. You know, it's meant to be a low-budget, quirky kind of art house movie, and it would just make such a great film. We tried to get Billy Connolly interested. We first tried to get Sean Connery, then we tried to get Billy Connolly interested in playing the main character. And they did express interest, but for different reasons, it kind of it never happened. But you'd have to get someone of that kind, you know, that stature, a larger than life iconic character to play that role. But I would love to get that one day made into film. We have got a very good script for it.
So anyone listening, get in touch.
Please do.
The Seal Club is your new project, which is published by Independent London Books in November. And it's a collection of three novellas by you, Alan Warner and John King, all reflecting bodies of work that have become films. So Morven Keller, Trainspotting and Football Factory. Can you talk about a bit about how this project kind of came into existence?
I think that Alan had started to do kind of short fiction, sort of stuff, bringing out bits of short fiction. And the novella is always a nice place to be. I just got talking to John about it once, kind of over a drink, and we were talking about, John had this thing going with, we wanted to do something well in Solito, and Alan passed away a few years back, and we just kind of talked about doing a collection of novellas, and we thought about, we all started together, basically, John, Alan and myself, and we thought it'd be a nice thing to do, basically. So I'm doing a story about Begbie's family, who's one of the characters in Trainspotting, the kind of iconically violent character who becomes reformed, which I'd written it as a short story a while ago, and then I expanded it to make it into a stage play, which obviously with all the corona stuff and all that didn't really happen, and it's probably a long time before it would happen. So I took it and re-novelised it, but with the kind of with all the added staging stuff that was in it, to give the characters a bit more depth and complexity. Alan's kind of gone back to his, Alan was a train driver, so he's gone back to his kind of sort of train kind of thing. He did a great novel about it, The Dead Man's Pedal, about his experience as a train driver. So he's gone back into that kind of milieu. And John's gone back into football, and after a kind of departure from that, he's gone back into the, football and how football thuggery is kind of portrayed in the media, and the sort of, and this, that whole broader panorama of the kind of disintegration of Britain that's taking place around it. So you have all this, we've basically kind of gone back to our roots in a strange way. So it was a lot of fun. We had a lot of fun chatting about it, and we've had a lot of fun doing it, and working with John and with Martin Knight, who's John's partner in London Books. So kind of, they're two old friends, so it's just been, and obviously Alan is as well, so it's just been a kind of just a bit of fun, really, a bit, a kind of holiday from all the nonsense that's going on.
Yeah, absolutely. So The Seal Club will be out in November with London Books. Thank you very much for joining us today, Evan. It's been an absolute honor to have you here.
Thanks, Anna. Cheers.
Welcome to the actual book club section of the Brighton Book Club. Today we are talking about Supper Club by Lara Williams, which was recommended to me by my amazing friend Laura Mugridge, who is going to join me shortly to talk about this book. So first I'm going to read from the blurb.
29-year-old Roberta has spent her whole life hungry until the day she invents Supper Club. Supper Club is a secret society for hungry women. Each woman comes for her own reasons, carrying her own damages and needs, her own erasures and erosions. They come seeking transcendence. They come seeking themselves. They gather after dark and feast until they are sick, and month by month their bodies expand. At their center stands Roberta, cynical yet anxious, precocious and lost, searching for the answer to a simple question. If you feed a starving woman, what will she grow into? This is a story about the hunger that never goes away. It is a story about rage and about joy. Most of all, it's a story about young womanhood in all its profound loneliness, its wild, fleeting surges of hope. Devastatingly perceptive and savagely funny, Supper Club is a coming-of-age tale for our times, a love song to people who make us what we are, who lead us astray, and ultimately save us.
So, Laura, thank you so much for joining me to talk about this book.
So welcome.
If I asked you what Supper Club was actually about, what would you say?
Oh, gosh. I would say, for me, it was about taking up space and embracing something that feels like it's become taboo for women, which is gorging or even just eating at all. It's about being primal and about not stopping ourselves, like scratch and itch. I think that's what it's about. And I loved it because it's so infrequent that you see or hear stories of women who just like go for it in a really like slightly grubby way. It really reminded me of all films or TV where you see a woman eating. I realized if you see a woman eating in on telly, it's because there is a storyline where she's going to put weight on. Right. Almost always. Mm-hmm. Like I feel like if you see, if it's made a point of, then there's going to be a storyline in which she's pregnant or she's put weight on for some reason. And you never just see or hear of women just eating.
That is so interesting. Yeah. Absolutely. So the main character, Roberta, did you like her? And do you think it matters? Are we meant to like her?
I don't think we are supposed to like her. She's certainly not a figure of pity at all. But I quite admired the way she just slightly gave herself over to her needs a bit. Mm-hmm. She sort of reminded me of the main character in My Year of Rest and Relaxation.
Yeah.
By Atessa Mushfeg. Like the thing about her squirreling away in her room and just eating. I don't think we are supposed to like her, but like you said, I don't think that matters.
So there's quite a dark centre of this book, which touches on things like assault and abuse and the long-lasting effects of those. How did you kind of interpret these things in the book? And do you think that Roberta would have been the way she is had she not experienced such trauma when she was younger?
No, I don't think she would. And I think there's an awful... lot of women who have processed that trauma to varying degrees in a way that they will never really truly process that. And I think that there's something incredibly cathartic and primal and just almost gory and visceral about the way that Roberta expresses it and her friends express it. But actually, I mean, are they her friends?
Yeah, that's actually was my next question to you. So female friendship is very much another thing at the core of this book. Do you think these were kind of, for want of a better word, unhealthy relationships? There's a lot in there about codependence and jealousy and one-upping each other. Do you think this is realistic or do you think it's really problematic?
I think it's not realistic of a lot of relationships, but I also think it is rooted in some kind of truth. It's like the brightness has been turned up. If this book was an like an old-fashioned telly, yeah, then the brightness would be up really high. Mm-hmm. And the contrast would be up really high. I think all those things are just slightly brought out because all the relationships do feel quite poisonous, but the women all come together in this kind of glorious celebration of trauma or of releasing trauma. Absolutely. Which I think we as women we do that, but it's maybe not quite as massive a lot of the time.
It's quite extreme what they do without giving anything away. I mean, often illegal, quite extreme. If someone liked this book or liked the sound of it, what else have you read recently that you'd recommend?
I'm in the middle, actually, of reading Little Fires Everywhere, which I'm really enjoying. Mm. I'm kind of about 20 pages from the end and I'm really hoovering that up. Again, if they enjoyed this book, I would really recommend My Year of Rest and Relaxation. Mm-hmm. Again, loneliness is explored and processing of trauma is explored. So, I'm not really going to recommend like fun reads. That turns out that's what I really like reading, like really unpleasant narratives about really damaged women, which is a niche subject, but you know, I'm into it apparently. Also, I would recommend Boy Parts, which is quite, I know you've spoken about it on the podcast before, yeah, pretty heavy going.
But it's not a light read, but it's quite something.
Yeah, again, sort of quite a spiky read. But I say that Supper Club fits within that for me.
Absolutely. I think there's a really exciting canon of youngish women writers writing the kind of unexpected and the uninhibited, and I'm really enjoying it at the moment.
Oh yeah, me too.
Laura, thank you so much for joining us. Will you come back again soon?
Of course I will.
Thank you for listening to this month's episode of the Brighton Book Club. I'd like to do a quick shout out today to Field Magazine. You can find out more at www.fieldzine.com. They sent me their 10th edition called The Fire Truck. It's beautifully produced and packaged, and it's a great way to discover new writing in the area. I had a really interesting time on Twitter this month. Sounds like a weird thing to say, but I was discussing with many people why we should give authors who are not celebrities a chance in a market that feels very, very full of celebrity come authors. Jules Swain is a blogger, a reader, and a paramedic, and she is going to co-curate next month's show with me, which is really exciting. And she's chosen our next book club book, which is called My House is Falling Down by Mary Loudon. In events news, on November the 5th will be the next Brighton Book Club Live with Kate Davies, author of In at the Deep End. This is going to be at Selina, which is at the bottom of Preston Street. Tickets include a drink and food. They're £14 and you can get tickets online. Find them at the link tree in the Brighton Book Club Instagram bio. Thank you so much for listening today and for your love and support over the last 12 months. I'm really excited to keep carrying on with the Brighton Book Club and bringing you great book content. I'm leaving you today with music from my amazing friend, Aliza Legsdenay, who you can find on Spotify and Instagram. She is well worth the follow. I absolutely love this song. This is Jelly.
I like it when we sweat. Yeah, you put that big thing on me, caught you slipping in my wet. I know you like a skit, puff and pass me cigarette. Only let you call me baby if you're packing a baguette. Petit pas French, no more sitting on the bench. When you whisper, I get drenched. And the way you roar, sweeter than revenge. Like, ooh, you like it in your face. There was some, leave a trace. I can tell you like my shape, cause you're not the one to usually chase. Like, the girls don't care. Choke my neck, baby, if you dare. Let me know if the grip is there. Start that fire in my belly. You do something to me. You do something to me. You sweet like sugar, soft like jelly. You do something to me. You do something to me. Start that
see who be the boss who. Boss who. I go there the down, you go there top. I get big cassava for you. I go electrify your body, you go shock. Bay your body soft like jelly. Bedroom stars, we were many. Bend down, no shorts, ride long journey. And then ube soup, afro mommy. Sugar day your waist, sugar day your lips. Sugar day your body, allow me make a taste. When I licky licky, you go blow me. You go make I feel like I did Josie. So back at your body saucy. When I finish daddy be the name where you go call me. Bad, 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 I be bad. Today I go make you go shout.
Start that fire in my belly. You do something to me. You do something to me.